Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children!
And welcome back to Little Cuts, your... And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly minisode where we dig into the things that we've been watching, I believe, recently.
I'm Mary Beth. This week we are talking about Far Off Planets, New Orleans Makeovers, Murderous Poppers, A Spanish Giallo, The Grandfather of Found Footage, and Creepy Boys Named Bob. Cool. Yeah. Hell yeah. Love all of that for you.
Same. I know this isn't one that you're talking about, but I did see on Twitter that you finally saw ISS. Wasn't that intense?
Yes! Oh my god. Sorry, my eyes are like aggressively itching all of a sudden. But yes! It definitely was. I was surprised that not as many people liked it. I definitely like can understand.
I know.
It's like a little slow in parts, but it's not bad. I thought it was quite well done for only $13 million budget too. You know what I mean? Like,
right?
Yeah. So same. I was glad to see it. I know. I was reading, looking at reviews, and I was like, I don't agree.
Because I was so happy, like, when I originally saw it. Oh, hey, Pepperina. Pepperina just joined chat. Yeah, I was, like, really excited when I saw it back at Tribeca. And then I've seen the reviews coming out recently. I was like, what?
I know.
I was surprised at some of the...
It's a bummer.
The reviews coming out of it. Yeah. But the reason why I was thinking about that is Far Off Planets. So I do want... What is this? I want to hear.
Okay, so Far Off Planets. This is the HBO Max... /Max streaming series Scavenger's Reign, which came out on the streamer in October of last year. And I didn't know about it. And that Steve kind of had brought it up. Like, hey, like, this is this really cool animated show on Max. Let's check it out. And I said, yeah, why not? It is, like, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. So,
why do I know about this one? I literally, in my search bar, it was a history that I have been looking at this. So why was I looking at this?
I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't know. But it's this, like, beautiful show, basically. And it's, like, very kind of bare bones in its plot at first. It's like three separate storylines of these, because they're all crew member, like a splintered off crew from a scavenger ship that crashed on a nearby planet called the Demeter. And a lot of the crew didn't make it. And those that did kind of were scattered off across the planet. And so it's looking at three of the people that survived and their stories of trying to survive on the planet and find a way home. And this is a planet that is nothing like our own. And it's incredible to watch this because you can tell that the animators had so much fun just making up the weirdest creatures you've ever heard of. Like, just absolutely incredible animation. If anyone has ever read... Oh, I'm trying to think of a comic. Steve said it's like Last Man, which is a French comic. It's just like, it's got this very kind of interesting... It's very colorful, but it's muted. A lot of muted pastels. And... it's also just, like, it's incredible late night watching is how I'll put it. Like, it's very good, like, get a little stoned and, like, get really into it.
It looks a little trippy.
It's trippy. Yeah, it's trippy and it's, like, kind of, it's very vibey. It's not calm because it's definitely very gory and there's a lot of body horror, but it's also not, like, incredibly action-packed. So it's this weird kind of mix of like sci-fi horror, but also like tranquility. It's very strange, but I really dig the vibe. It's 12 episodes. We've watched 6 of them and they're 24 minutes, like, a TV half hour. And it's just like absolutely gorgeous. Aaliyah Shawkat is the voice of a robot, which is really cool. And yeah, the show just goes to like absolutely bizarre places. You have no idea what's going to happen next to anyone at all, and what horrific thing they're going to run into next. And
there's some body horror.
Oh yeah, right? Like Annihilation type shit. Like, think of Annihilation, but like it took over the whole planet, kind of. If like you want sort of a comp to it, there's something that involves like an alien mind controlling someone and feeding them black goo and having it kill for him. It's all just like very strange, but it's really good. So you want to watch something like kind of weird late at night. And this was based on an Adult Swim animated short, which like should probably tell you everything you need to know.
Really?
Yeah. Very Adult Swim vibes, like, but made into a really cool, weird sci-fi show that just looks like a lot of animators having a lot of fun making kooky, weird little creatures. And like, Steve and I call it like the show of little guys, because there's just a lot of cute little guys, but who also are very dangerous. You're like, oh, he's so cute. And then he like reveals himself to be like an incredibly dangerous being. It's very good.
It looked like the animation looks stunning. And I don't know why I was looking it up. Someone told me about it or I read about it somewhere. I don't know. But it's so weird that I was like, that sounds so familiar to me, but I haven't seen it. And then I was like, why is it on IMDb, like in my search bar? So I'm glad to hear it's good. I've been meaning to watch it, apparently.
Absolutely, highly recommend watching it. It's just like an incredible experience. So yeah, New Orleans makeovers.
So I had wanted to talk about this last week, but I didn't get the screeners until late, and so I didn't have enough time to view it. But it is out now. The new season of Queer Eye is out as of Wednesday. So by the time this episode airs, it will be out for people to watch and enjoy. I have to say, might be my favorite season of the show.
Really?
Yes. It's been kind of hit or miss the last few years. I think the pandemic, post-pandemic and during the pandemic and everything, it kind of lost its luster for me a little bit. And this season is like a return to form in ways that made me reminded myself of why I initially got hooked onto this show. And I think it's because I think it's sad because Bobby is leaving. This is like his last season. And I have heard like rumors through like social media that there have been like bickering and issues with the Queer Eye people. So I don't know. And I don't know how much true that is or if that's just speculation. But I know this is Bobby's last season, and I'm really kind of sad about that because on screen, these guys have so much chemistry together. And this is the first season where like I was like, ooh, Karamo actually has a purpose. Karamo is for those who haven't watched the show, he's sort of the culture guy that kind of he chats with people. But like this season, I feel like the things that he is doing for these, they call them heroes, the people that they're makeovering, is actually like helpful trying to get them out of their shell or trying to get them to embrace life in ways that they maybe have not done in the past. And I think his role is actually like for the first time for me, an important addition to what they're doing. And so if you've never seen Queer Eye, it's just five queer people go out and help do basically a makeover for people, make over their house, make over their lives, try to get them different fashion, different hairstyles or makeup, and try to make them into a more well-rounded person to kind of go out into the world and get their mojo back in a lot of ways. And the people this year are great. There is a deaf teacher who is who runs a football program at a high school. And that was really, really good to see. There's a clarinetist who performs on like streets and has performed for like presidents and is really talented. Following her and her new career path as she is like getting into mid to older age. And I think the heroes this year are just wonderful people that I was like, this is really good. And this is why I initially started watching the show. So if you're a fan that kind of fell off, I do think this is the best season that I've seen of it in a long time. I've seen all the episodes. And I really wish I could have talked about it last week, but it is all out there for everyone to view now. And I highly recommend
it. Yeah. I haven't really kept up with Queer Eye for a while. It kind of got on my nerves a little bit.
Same.
It just felt a little bit like the whole like toxic positivity, and I don't know. It just like the it got a little old. So I'm glad to hear it's getting back though to like its roots, because I loved the first couple of seasons. Like I definitely loved what they were trying to do and the goals with it, but it kind of fell off, became a little bit gimmicky. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay.
And it kind of felt like they were just sort of going through the motions in some of the seasons, but like this. For whatever reason, and this is their second season in New Orleans, because they did last season in New Orleans too, and I didn't really care for that one. But this one, actually doing really good, and reminded me again why I fell in love with the show in the first place. And it's sad, because Bobby's leaving, and I don't know what they're going to do next. But if this is the last season, they're going out on a bang.
Good. Well, that's, I mean, hey, at least that's happening, you know?
Keeping the gays, but going murderous? I want to hear about murderous poppers.
Okay. How do I describe this movie? So, I got this link in my email about a queer horror film that, you know, was coming to, like, select theaters, and it was made by Todd Varel, who is a pretty, like, pretty big pioneer in the queer cinema space. Like, he's made a lot of, like, very gay, like, low-budget movies, including one about a gay serial killer that also stars Parker Posey. So this is his latest film, You Can't Stay Here, starring Guillermo Diaz, who was in, like, Scandal and things like that. And I was really curious because it's a cruising-esque erotic thriller where this guy is a photographer and he was closeted and his wife caught him with a man, and he is now going through a divorce with his wife. It's rather amiable, but like, you know, he also is taking care of his sick mother who is in the decline, and he's trying to make it as a photographer. And it takes a lot of his photos in Central Park of men who are cruising. A lot of his subject, like he does a lot of watching through his camera and taking basically like documenting the cruising culture in New York City, but then also he himself is cruising as well. And there's a lot of gay sex, thumbs up. A lot of like looking at cruising and kind of like and this also is like the danger of it, because at one point he sees someone kill another man in the park, and he becomes like linked with this guy, and it just kind of descends into this nightmarish portrait of a guy who's closeted and open and is ashamed of himself and not, and is like going through all of these emotions and trying to exist as a gay man in the 90s in New York. And murderous poppers is part of my description because this killer, this like gay serial killer, uses a special kind of popper to knock out his victims and basically like drugs them into not being able to move while he kills them. Which, look, I have never seen poppers used like this. So, like, this movie is just, like, very queer in that, like, it's not afraid to talk about jerking off, about sex, public sex, sex in bathrooms. It's just, like, incredibly gay and not tabooing or shaming anything. And it's very low budget. Some of the acting is, like, eh. But it feels dangerous in a really interesting way, in a way that like a lot of movies aren't afraid to feel. And I really appreciated how gay it is and how it has Guillermo Diaz doing a lot of really gay things in this movie and being just very queer and not ever trying to hide from the queerness, and also portraying like weird, bad, gross, chaotic queer characters and gay characters. And It's the kind of cinema that, like, it's the kind of cinema you think when you think of, like, new queer cinema, of just, like, kind of grimy, low-budget, DIY vibes, but, like, really talking about something interesting. And, yeah, it's not done perfectly, but it's not afraid to, like, get messy. And I love that about it. And it's that kind of queer, like, it's, like, that kind of guerrilla queer cinema that we so desperately need in this world, especially in a world that's becoming so much more, like, puritanical and, like, sex is gross and we shouldn't be, like, portraying gay, like, gayness and everything. And this movie's just a big middle finger to that. And I, like, really appreciate it. It's not going to be everyone's taste because it is, like, lower budget. And I know people are, like, kind of rude, can be kind of rude or, like, not even rude, but it's a little bit distracting, but I don't think it's that bad. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff going on, especially with such limited budgets, in terms of, like, the editing and some of the technical accomplishments that are going on in it.
And this was set during the 90s, right?
I believe so, yeah. It's set during the 90s, but, like, it's very, it's not as explicit about it in the movie itself. Like, they say that in the description, but, like, in the movie, like, because they don't really, they mention AIDS very briefly, but that's not really, like, a big discussion. There's a lot of stuff going on, like, kind of in the subtext of the movie, which I appreciate. It's not trying to be like, okay, cool, so being gay was all of these things in the 90s, and we're going to make it all about having AIDS and being gay. No. It's about really interrogating the seedy side of, cruising, I guess, is kind of seedy, but, like, really looking at cruising as someone who is cruising and who is actually queer. And it's, I've actually never seen Cruising, like, the movie Cruising. I've never actually seen it.
I've never either.
I know I should. But this, I feel like, is, like, same. What Cruising... Yeah, you probably should see it. But this is, like, this is, like, what Cruising could have been if a queer person was given the resources to make it.
Gotcha. It's interesting, because because, you know, you were talking about Todd Varrow, and I was like, I'm not familiar with this man, but it turns out that one of his movies in the 90s was one that I had snuck.
Oh, really?
When I was still very closeted.
No way!
And I didn't know. I hadn't even thought about this movie until I was looking at it on IMDb. Like, what has he done? Have I seen anything that he's done? And he did a movie that came out, I think, in 1996, which I would have been 15 at the time when it came out. So I probably saw it maybe a few years later, but it was called Frisk.
Yeah!
And it was about a gay serial killer. And that was one of the movies. I don't remember anything about it, but I do remember that this was one that I had rented on the sly when I think it might have been at college, and watched it when I was dabbling, very closeted, but dabbling in queer cinema. So wild. just took me back.
That is nuts, because yeah, that was, I think that one, that's the one I think that Parker Posey is in. And that is, I think, one of his most well-known movies. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird. But yeah, like, he's been around making queer cinema for a long time. And so I was like, I actually haven't really seen anything. Should watch this, because, again, I just, as most of people know on this podcast, we love queer cinema and want to try to champion it whenever we can. I know it's weird, but surprise. So yeah,
it looks like his first video came out at V for Violet in the 89. So dude's been producing, making movies for a long time.
So it doesn't have, I don't think it has VOD release yet, but we'll keep you updated. Okay. Because I think it's definitely going to be one of those movies that, like, a lot of people who, like, kind of culty queer cinema are going to vibe with.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that is, You Can't Stay Here. Going from Murderous Poppers to a Spanish Giallo.
So this was brought to my attention from Carter Smith, the director Carter Smith, because I had earlier this month, I had said that it's January Giallo and I really wanted to watch some that I had not seen before. And then life happened, and I've been really bad at keeping up with that. So I'm probably going to keep watching Giallo into February, because I'm hooked on this bandwagon right now. And this one is called No One Heard the Scream. And
incredible title.
fantastic, fantastic title. And it is, so one of the joys, I just want to say that one of the joys of being a physical collector, but like just buying things sight unseen, is that you don't realize that you own three movies, no, five movies from this director.
Movies and never watching them. It's my favorite activity.
But I have the Cannibal Man, which is also directed by Eloy de
Lima. Oh, incredible cover.
I have. He did. Right. Isn't that great? And I am definitely going to be watching this. And then I also, so he was also, he made these movies that I believe they're called, they're pronounced Kinky or Kinky. And they were movies that were about juvenile delinquents kind of in the 80s. He's gay. He's a gay director. And these are apparently very either homoerotic or are outwardly queer. He also did one that I don't know where I have it, but oh, this was from Severn. This was a Severn release that came out last year. And then he also did one that is a movie called Pals, which is being that was released by Vinegar Syndrome. It has a very evocative cover of just a man's nipple and says Pals. So I have them. I've never watched them, but now I'm definitely going to, because No One Heard the Scream is about a high class escort who goes to London, and she sort of has like a sugar daddy that has paid for her apartment and gives her money, and she goes for one weekend a month to London to be is his pal for the weekend. And
his pal.
There's one weekend.
Right. His pal.
There's one weekend. He gives her like an airplane ticket every month, and she comes back and spends the weekend with him. And then she gets her apartment and stuff. And one weekend, she's like on the way to the airport, and she's like, you know what? I don't really want to go. So she cancels her plans, goes back home, and she... Yeah, exactly. And she lives in this building. I get the feeling that it's a newer building, and there's not a lot of people there. And it's made of offices. So it's basically her there, and like a very hard of hearing concierge. And then she goes upstairs to her room, calls the dude, and says, "Hey, we're ending this." She's like, "I'm kind of done." And then she hears a commotion, and she sees her next door neighbor tossing his wife's body down an elevator shaft. He catches her catching him, and it starts off as like this cat and mouse game where they're literally the only two in this apartment building, and he is trying to get into her to talk to her, and she's like, "Dude, stay the fuck away." Her phone's not working. He cuts the cords. Doesn't allow her to contact anyone. Gets inside and basically tells her, "I don't want to kill you. So what we're going to do instead is you are going to be an accomplice, and you're going to help me get rid of this body, and you're going to help me do all of this stuff so that you won't go to the police. I don't have to kill you, and we can just be done." And so that's the setup of this initial
Jesus.
Story. And it goes from there to some very twisted romance type thing. And I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, I don't understand why this is classified as a giallo, because it does not have the hallmarks that I'm used to seeing initially in an Italian giallo film. But by the end of the movie, it has a corker of an ending. The ending of this movie is a real fucking corker. I gasped at what happens at the very end. And it makes you kind of re-look at what's happening in the film in a way. And I was like, oh, this is totally a giallo. Huh. But it's one of those that holds it. It holds its cards very close to its chest until that final act. And it's a little iffy in spots. I do think there's some pacing issues as we get towards the midpoint to the third act is a little not so great. But overall, I really enjoyed this. It has a lot of homoeroticism in it. it's wild. This was a wild movie. I believe it's streaming on Shudder right now. It's also on like AMC Plus. There's a Severin release of this one as well that I desperately want to buy. This movie was great. It was such a surprise, and I'm so glad that Carter Smith sort of pushed it in my direction, because I am now obsessed with Eloy de la Iglesia, and I want to watch all of
it. Yeah, you've gotten me like super interested in this now. Huh. Okay. I have never heard of it. I already have the Quinky collection pulled up, because I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to watch the Kinky collection. It's three movies. I'm very excited to watch the Cannibal Man and Pals, and I want to try to seek out everything that he's doing, because this man was gay, right? I think the other important thing to note is that No One Heard the Scream was being produced during the Franco movement in Spain, and so like there was a lot of working around censorship issues of trying to be political. This movie is darkly funny too. There is a really hilarious moment in this movie, and it just seeing all of this stuff come together and seeing what he has to operate in as a gay man making provocative cinema at a time when like censors were very big in Spain. Censorship was very big in Spain. Great. So highly recommend this movie.
Okay. Loved it. All right. Well, a new thing to become obsessed with.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds awesome.
1973.
Wow.
All right, let's go to another, I'm guessing, older film. I want to hear about the grandfather of found footage.
Yeah, so a little bit of context here. So I, in an attempt to, like, make some kind of dent, hit Twitch. Who is Twitch? I don't think Twitch has ever been in here before, by the way. Twitch, you did, in fact, guess it correctly. But let me preface this. So
I was wondering.
So I... in an attempt to like make a dent in my watch list, I made a bucket list of 2024 movies in 2024 I want to watch. All kinds of years, genres, whatever. And it's just like, I went through my watch list and just picked what I think kind of what I really want to watch this year, theming it around my own movie, things I really want, like I really need to see, etc. And the first one was Cannibal Holocaust. Because I have never seen it, and I know I needed to see it for a plethora of reasons, and I'm writing a book about found footage, so, like, I need to have seen it for, like, every reason known to man, so I finally sat down to watch it. And,
what are your thoughts?
The note I wrote was, 100% understand why this is technically, like, from a technical perspective, an incredibly important movie, but Jesus Christ. And that was, like, my big note about this movie, because I didn't really know much about it. It was one of those things that I tried to, like, kind of stay away from, because I wanted to, you know, when I finally saw it, be shocked. And, well, I was pretty shocked by this movie. Makes a lot of sense. It really is quite intense. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's essentially the first half is a traditional narrative about a professor going into the rainforest with a guide to find a missing crew of American filmmakers who went into the South American rainforest to film a cannibalistic tribe. And what they discover is a terrifying, sexually aggressive, horrible group of people who can't speak English and don't wear clothes and rape women all the time and are always naked. You know, like really great representations of indigenous peoples and their traditions. And whilst they're doing this, they then discover the footage of these filmmakers. So the last half of the movie is really interesting in how they are literally watching footage that they found in the rainforest and assembling it to create some, like, big, crazy thing. And then they, at the end of it, they're like, uh-oh, maybe we shouldn't release this. It's just, like, an hour and a half of depravity. You know what I... like, have you seen this, Terry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, like... I watched this in bed, which was, like, really dumb. But whatever. And I was, like, turning my computer away from Steve. Because I was like, I don't want him to, like, think less of me for watching this, like, right now. Like, this is, like, a lot. I was like, it's a lot... for me to be watching this, especially the turtle scene. I had heard about the turtle scene.
Yeah.
And, okay, the Cursed Films episode on Shudder, that was something I was going to watch for research, too, because I was curious about, like, learning about the whole context of, like, he got arrested. Ruggiero got arrested.
Yeah.
Because they thought...
The story is so interesting around this movie.
It is, and then you watch the movie, and you're like, oh, God, we made such a fucking stink about this. Like, that, and I'm not trying to be a dickhead. I understand, like... Again, this was a very important, like, piece of kind of technical genre filmmaking that introduced, like, a whole new element that then wasn't really tapped into for, like, decades until, like, we have some stuff going on, but, like, it wasn't really tapped into for a very long time. So it's really interesting to, like, see the format being born. It's just very interesting that this is where the format was born. So there's a lot of rape, like... More, I expected, like, gore. I did not expect, and that was what really threw me off, was, like, how much sexual assault is in this movie. I was not expecting that. And I was like, this is so dumb. I was like, this is so stupid.
I think it's because the... I think because the image that most people get in their head and the image that, like, I think caused a lot of the snuff film allegations is the woman impaled on the spike. And so I think a lot of the focus of people, like, talking about the film is on that sequence or the real animal murders that happen in the film, which is also why it was banned in a lot of countries, is because of that. And so I think a lot of the conversation is about that and misses the fact that, yes, there is a lot of sexual assault.
It's just, like, such a... If it hadn't had this, like, reputation for the found footage element, I don't know if I really would have watched it. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like another Italian exploitation movie that is like, look, violence, and people will watch any violence. And I'm like, yeah, right. You're just using that as an excuse to show people, women with their tits out, getting brutalized by men. And, like, you also... And, like, I know that this was made in the 70s, but... Really, really not good indigenous representation in that movie. Again, I know that is a very basic thing to say, but it just, wowee, good Lord. I mean, I am glad I watched it. I'm glad I finally watched it. I think it was a really important thing for me to watch. And I think I, like, definitely understand, like, it helped me actually make a lot of connections from my introduction of my book, that I was like, oh my God, all of a sudden, like, the puzzle pieces are finally kind of clicking together about the evolution of found footage going from, like, camera crews, because they're the ones that are the most likely to have cameras, to the individual post 9/11. And I just thought that it's just, like, a very interesting kind of thing to track. So very glad I watched it. Definitely not a movie I think I'll ever be seeking out to watch in full again. For several reasons, same. But an important piece of horror history, I suppose. I kind of wish it is, so we kind of have to just interrogate that about why it's
It is. I do think it is an important piece of horror cinema. Yeah. It's not one that I ever will, like you, watch again. I saw it once and was like, "Oh, this is." I get it, but also, I never want to see it again. But also, I don't think this genre of movies, or subgenre, I should say, of film is of interest to me. And Twitch brings up in the chat, Green Infernal didn't help with, like, indigenous representation either. And yes, but, like, those kind of cannibal films of, like, Cannibal Pharaoh, Cannibal Holocaust, I'm trying to remember all of them. Like, they're not my cup of tea. And it's not something that I'm going to actively ever seek out again. Am I glad that I saw Cannibal Holocaust? I mean, in terms of, like, it being an artifact of a specific time period, yes. But at the same time, I'm with you. Not something that
it's just, like,
I want to ever
it's see. It's so funny because they go from these scenes of, like, obvious skeletons that were bought in a party city covered in beetles. And you're like, haha, that's funny. And then it's like, a turtle being split open, and you're like, Christ on the cross, like, what the fuck? Also, what the hell?
Yeah.
And they, it's just like the animal cruelty stuff too. I was like, I don't know, like, It's just a lot. It's a lot. It's like, it is an overwhelming movie because there's a lot of things being thrown at you. And at one point you're like, I want to laugh at some of the bodies. Then you see it even more and you're like, oh, I can't laugh at that. And there's just like so much happening on the screen all the time in terms of like sights and sounds and things that you can almost taste and smell and feel. So like, again, hey, you know what? Good for him. He created a sensory overload. At what cost? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I finally watched it. And I can say I've watched it now. So, just check that box off now, finally. I've been meaning to watch this movie for literal years. And I was like...
I know. I think you had brought it up to me at one point. I've never seen it. Because I had asked, I believe, if you had, as a found footage person, like, I wondered if you had seen it.
I just didn't want to watch it.
I don't blame you.
I was like...
I don't blame you.
So now I have...
I'm glad you had a reason to, though. Like, you can at least, like, put it as I am...
Academic. I am now more academically educated and more academically aware. Good for me. Whatever. Anyway, let's end this on the creepy boys named Bob.
Bob is such an old...
This is so funny because one of the stars of Bystanders, his name is Bob, so I'm just laughing at this. Oh, yeah.
Really?
It's very funny. And he's like a very sweet boy. But yeah.
So we're keeping the Italian train going, and this is the final film in Lucio Fulci's Gates of Hell. This is The House by the Cemetery, which has a little kid who is the epitome of creepy kids named Bob, who just has like, I mean, I hate to say that he has a creepy face because he's a kid and he's a real person, but he had a very kind of creepy face. And it doesn't help matters that, you know, a lot of the Italian films have been dubbed in ADR. And so his voice does not match his face. And it adds to like the kind of uncanny valley of creepiness that just like...
Sorry.
I shared it on Twitter on Twitter or Blue Sky that I was watching this, and someone responded with a photo of Bob, and I was like, yep, that is what I'm taking away from this. But I want to set the scene about this movie because it was unfortunately an Ambien watch for Terry, and I had not looked at my notes. I was like, I took notes for this. I'll be able to like remind myself what this movie is. And I'm just gonna share what Ambien Terry wrote down because...
Oh, I'm so excited!
This is what I wrote about this movie to help spur my memory when I was going to talk about it. The most weather bar attack I've seen. I don't know. He's like, move over Argento with your silly best. What? Dude had it on his hands, biting him, and then her takes scissors and just keeps stabbing and pissing the knife in. Blood everywhere.
I love
I don't know. Beat poetry word salad, right? I don't know what I was trying to say.
I don't know what you were trying to say either, honestly.
And literally, I was like, okay, I'm going to talk about House by the Cemetery. I took notes while I was watching it. I'm going to look at my notes right before recording. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? What the absolute fuck? And some of that is because I was doing swipe controls on my phone as I was like taking notes. So some of it, like, is just because.
I'm gonna give you maybe 10% of that. I'm gonna give the other 90 to the Ambien. Okay. I think is what I'm gonna do there.
Yeah.
Because you would have noticed if you were. Yeah. Ambien Terry Slum said, "I don't care where I'm going. It's just a good journey."
Basically.
Oh my god, that would be so good.
What?
Somebody write a short where it's Terry on Ambien thinking it's a movie, but there's actually a murder taking place.
Oh my god.
I do love that.
No one steal that idea, because I want to write that. Oh my god, that is actually quite brilliant. Oh my god. I'm putting that
tuck
away
that,
in my mental
tuck
library.
That back into the folds of your brain.
Yeah. I need to finish my Alien or my need to finish. No, okay.
I'll cut that out.
My script. please. So, The House by the Cemetery is about a house by a cemetery.
What?
where I know where an evil doctor whose last name, and this is why I love Italian horror directors. The doctor's name is Freudstein, not Frankenstein, but Freudstein.
You know what? Respect. You know, like, respect. Italian horror said subtlety. Who is she? Nah.
And the film opens with a young girl in this abandoned house, a young woman, I should say, in this abandoned house, and she is looking for her boyfriend. I believe this might be where my initial note was about. And she's calling for him, and then she sees him stabbed with a knife or scissors, and then she gets stabbed in the head and gets dragged off screen. And then it cuts to New York, where Bob and his parents are packing to move into said house that apparently his dad, who is studying old houses, is following in the footsteps of a coworker that used to live in the house, and then I think murdered someone and killed himself or something. I don't 100% remember, but
okay, yeah, sure.
In New York, while they are packing, Bob sees a photograph of the house and sees a little girl standing in the window, like in terror, kind of waving at him and telling him in his head to not come to this house, warning him. Very Shining-esque with Bob, except creepy. He's trying to.
Did you not think Danny Torrance was a fucking creepy child? Is Bob creepier than Danny Torrance?
Yes.
Continue. I'm going to look up what this boy looks like while you speak.
You need to look up this kid and then imagine a high-pitched voice that is definitely not belonging to
Ew, he looks like my fucking terrible ex-boyfriend as a child. Ew, he looks like... Oh, that is disturbing.
And I hate saying this about a kid because he's just a little kid.
Oh, I know.
It's not.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Played by a woman named Giovanni Frezza. Could not be more fucking Italian if you tried. Anyway, sorry.
And anyway, they get to the house and then murders start happening. Oh. And eventually find out that weird things happening in the house, zombies. This is not as good as Fulci's other two Gates of Hell films. It's not The Beyond, which I think is perfection, and it's not City Living Dead, which I find to be so surreal. This one is weird. It has some like very odd pacing issues. So not my favorite, but Ambientary apparently really dug it. But I don't think Ambientary really knew what he was writing about.
I love that, though.
So
I did briefly listen to a clip of his voice, and yeah, that's very strange. Don't like it too much.
Yeah, it just does not match. Uh-huh. It does not match. Don't
love that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Okay, so which one was your favorite?
The Beyond. Okay. The Beyond, I think, is Fulci at his mm-hmm. best for the ones of his films that I've seen. I think City of the Living Dead does some really good prep work into it, and I really like some of the surreal imagery in it, but The Beyond is just so good.
The City of the Living,
minus the tarantula scene.
The City of the Living Dead is the one you said that was really gross, right?
The City of the Living Dead is the one in which I was trying to eat cheese.
Yeah, that's right, you couldn't. Yeah,
blow in hunt like 20 something pounds of maggots, which again, maggots don't weigh much. That is a lot of fucking maggots. So it was gross. That movie was disgusting. Disgusting. And this one just kind of pales in comparison to the other two. So a little disappointed that this was like the final, you know, go out for. But we got The Beyond because of it. And chef's kiss.
Cool. I need chef's to rewatch kiss. The Beyond. I actually have both of these movies. The ones that aren't The Beyond on my list. For like my 2024 bucket list movie, so I think I might do like a triple feature.
I recommend them. I do recommend them, but just know that the Beyond is, yeah, is going to be fine. The best one from my perspective.
Listeners, I'll put my my 2024 letterbox bucket list in the show notes if you're interested in following along.
Please, I want to take a look at it.
If what I'm watching. A lot of weird shit. Shocking, I know.
I am so surprised by this.
Visitor Q? Oh boy, finally going to watch that. Uh-oh.
Oh.
Have you heard of that?
I have, yes. I've never seen it, but I have heard of it, yeah.
Weirdly horny, probably, so we'll see. Anyway, on that note, I don't really know.
On that wonderful note.
Who are we talking to on Monday?
We are chatting with Adam Caesar, the author of the many books, but more recently and probably most famously, The Clown in a Cornfield series of books, with the third one coming out later this year. He also was the writer of Last Night at Terrace Lanes, which is currently co-writer of Last Night at Terrace Lanes, which is currently out on VOD.
I executive produced that movie, full disclosure.
And we didn't have a whole lot of time to chat with him. I think we're going to try to get him back, because you'll find out when you listen to the movie or listen to the episode, but there was a little bit of technical snafu in trying to get the movie that initially he wanted. So I think we're going to have him hopefully back later this year when maybe Clown in the Cornfield 3 comes out. Who knows? But he brought with him The Dentist. You want to talk about seedy, weird movies? We chatted about The Dentist. It was very weird.
It was a fun conversation, but it's a fucking weird movie.
It was a great conversation.
Weird movie. So get prepared for that. All right, listeners, well, you've heard from us, but we want to hear from you. Did you watch something that we watched this week and have thoughts? Is there something that we should be covering? If you look up my Letterboxd list, is there a glaring missing thing I really need to watch this year? Send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us directly on social media. On Twitter, I am at mbmcandrews, and on Instagram, I am at mb.mcandrews.
And I'm at Gaily Dreadful everywhere, and I want to throw out that if there are some underseen giallo that you think I need to watch, please throw it my direction.
Yeah. And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on social media. We are at Scarred Podcast on Twitter and Blue Sky, and at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And if you want to join wonderful people in watching this live, you can help support us by joining us on Patreon.
Please. Anyway, thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.